This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
We've been in a study session looking at an essay of Dogen Zenji, the founder of our lineage in Japan in the 13th century. And this essay we've been looking at is called Self-Verification Samadhi. Samadhi is a Sanskrit word for one-pointed presence. When the apparent subject and the apparent object, the apparent person and the apparent world become one point. No separation. That's samadhi. And this particular samadhi is called self-verification samadhi. So what is self? We've been exploring this week. This term self that is woven all throughout the tradition of Buddha Dharma, but used in various different ways. If you're practicing within the traditions of Buddha Dharma, you will encounter this word self, and it's good to be clear on what kind of self we're speaking of. So this week I've been proposing three kinds of self, which are all operating for almost everybody all the time simultaneously. And studying the self is studying these different aspects, realms that we can call self. So the first of these three, I would define as the interrelationship among all the elements of body and mind. In Buddhist language, we sometimes say the five aggregates or the five skandhas. That's like body and physical sensations and mental sensations, conceptions and perceptions of the mind, conditioned habit patterns and tendencies, and the consciousness that seems to be residing in our head or something, that's observing a world outside of itself. Those elements are include all the elements of our experience, and they're constantly changing, the Buddha teaches. These aspects of body and mind are moment to moment changing, never remain for more than an instant. They're interdependent with each other. For example, the body and the consciousness are interdependent with each other, and the feelings are interdependent with those, and our habit patterns are interdependent with the mind and body. And these elements of body and mind are interdependent with other bodies and minds and with the whole world. So they're everything that we can call experience of body and mind is impermanent, only lasts a moment. It's interdependent with a bunch of other experiences of this person and other people. And, and all these experiences are not ultimately satisfying, the Buddha teaches, because they're quickly passing and we can't get a hold of any of it. So this interrelationship of all these elements of experience in a so-called person is one type of self. We could call it a conventional self, a relative self, an interdependent self. It's just a flux of experience, impermanent, diversity of experience. It's conventionally, we call it a self. We use this word I conventionally, provisionally, we can use this word I for this constantly changing flux of experience of body and mind. The word I arises dependently on the body and mind. The word I is just the provisional name that's part of the interdependent body and mind. There's nothing stable in any of it. So we can call that a kind of self. And that's not so much a problem if we just leave it at that. If we just say, I'm not really sure who this is. It's just a collection of changing tendencies. There's nothing really there to get a hold of. Maybe okay. Where the problem comes in is if we take this word I to not just refer provisionally to this collection of changing experience, but we feel as if there is some singular, permanent, independent entity called I or me. We imagine that this collection of body and mind experiences is something kind of fixed or stable. Or we imagine a kind of singular, independent, permanent entity that is the owner of all this changing body and mind experience. Don't we sometimes feel like there's me that has a body, and me that has a mind, and me that has an experience right now? Some kind of entity, some kind of singular, unchanging, independent entity that's always here, that's personal and separate from others, and that owns this flux of body and mind experiences. That kind of imagination, believing that that is so and feeling that that is so, is what the Buddha says is the root of all our problems. Because there isn't such an entity. There isn't an I that owns the body and mind. There's just body and mind stuff happening. And maybe it's okay, even if there's a feeling that there's somebody here, if it's just another interdependent feeling that there's somebody here, or a sense that there's somebody here that's owning it or controlling it. But if we actually believe it, if we actually reify this imagined idea, the word reify is, I think, a nice one in Buddhism. It means to give more reality to something than it actually has. So we can imagine this singular, independent, permanent entity called me that's actually not just a changing body and mind, but some sort of thing that owns the body and mind. When we reify that idea of I, make it more real than it is, it's just an idea. It's just an imagination. If we reify it, then we hold on to it. And then I become afraid. It's not exactly that the body becomes afraid, or the feelings of pleasure and happiness become afraid, or the conceptions and perceptions become afraid, or the habitual tendencies become afraid, or the consciousness becomes afraid. But this entity, this imagined entity, seems to be the one that becomes afraid. Or if we're insulted, attacked or insulted verbally, Kokyo, that was so bad when you know, this talk that you gave today was so bad. And I didn't understand any of it either. Rambling on about different types of self. And you just wasted our time. Then, if I'm believing that there's this entity that's kind of controlling the body and mind, it's kind of wounded. Is the body wounded by that insult? No. is the feeling of pleasant and unpleasant wounded. It might feel unpleasant, but the feeling is not exactly wounded. Is the conception that, that understands what's happening here, the conceiving of a world, is that wounded? No. Is the habitual karmic patterns and, personality wounded? No, that can't really be wounded. Is consciousness, which is just knowing what's happening, is that wounded? No, none of these elements of body and mind experience can be wounded or afraid, for example. But the sense of that there's some entity here, that it's almost as if the imagined entity we call self, a reified, fixed, separate, independent, singular entity called self. That one can feel wounded. That one can feel afraid. That one can feel dissatisfied. But when we look for the one in amongst all these elements of body and mind, the one that actually is wounded, afraid, or dissatisfied, we can't find it, actually. But we look for the one that, the me that owns this body. It's my body. Somebody could ask, whose body? My body. Well, who's that I that has a body? Actually, I'm not sure. Can't really find that one that has a body. But it is my mind. Whose mind? My mind. Who is it that has a mind? I do. You mean that something other than the mind that has a mind? Yeah, I think so. But when we look for it, we can't find it. So this is a subtle point, and that's why the Buddha teaches it in many different ways, that this kind of I, this kind of owner of body and mind experience, or this kind of reified version of our body and mind experience, it's just an illusion, but it's an illusion that we all create without any effort. We're kind of wired to imagine that there is this kind of entity. And when the Buddha says, this body is not myself, is anatman in Sanskrit, or anatta in Pali. This is what he's referring to. It's not some entity. These feelings are not some entity of self. This consciousness is not individual, separate consciousness that knows the world external to itself. That's not really who I am. That's not myself. The Buddha teaches that kind of not self. So these are the first two types, if you can follow this. The first type of self is just this provisional, constantly changing collection of body and mind stuff. It can't really, it's not an entity that can be truly insulted, wounded, or the body can be wounded, but emotionally wounded, it's not like there's an entity that can happen to. But we feel emotionally wounded or hurt, and we feel afraid, and we feel dissatisfied sometimes. So that's when the Buddha says, at the time of such a feeling, examine who is it actually that feels this way. And if we examine very carefully, quietly, calmly, and diligently, we find there isn't really such a one. There's just this changing body and mind stuff that's actually always okay. The body and mind changing stuff is just, it's just arising dependent on all these conditions. We're not in control of it. We didn't start it, and we can't stop it. We can just let it be. And that's a kind of freedom. So this first kind of interdependent relationship of body and mind experiences, changing moment to moment, is a kind of, you could say, conventional self, provisional kind of self. It's not really who we are. It's just a bunch of stuff. There's no entity there. And the second type of self, would be this, to kind of box this package of changing stuff into a singular, independent, separate entity. Imagine that there's somebody there that is simply the collection of that stuff, or that's a little bit outside the collection of stuff, but like has the collection of stuff on a leash. It kind of owns the stuff, and it manages the stuff, and it tries to protect the stuff. Somehow, is it outside the stuff? Or is it an entity that lives inside the stuff? Is it a little controller at the control station behind our eyeballs? Looking out through our eyeballs and pulling the levers like, no, turn left now. No, 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 turn right. No, no, you messed up, Kokyo. The little commentator residing behind our eyeballs. There's nobody there, really, unless we imagine one. Our imagination is very vivid, and when we reify this imagined controller. So, and that's one that the Buddha says is quite problematic. It's the root of all our problems, and the root of violence, and distress, and greed, hate, and delusion. So can you discern the difference between these two types of self? So far, one's, let's call it a conventional interdependent self, and the second one is called an imagined illusion of reified separate self. And so I think most Buddhist traditions would agree with something like this story. And then some, like Zen, some Buddhist traditions propose this third type of self that we could say is a true self, our true nature. And this one is like our present awareness itself before it's divided into a subject residing behind the eyeballs, and a world of objects outside of the subject. Before awareness is divided into those two pieces, or appears to be divided into these two pieces, there's just one boundless space of ever-present knowing awareness. Very ordinary, and all beings have this as their true nature. And so it's a little different from the interdependent collection of body and mind experiences, because this one is not dependent on anything. It's and it doesn't arise and cease like everything in the body and mind. Interdependent self is constantly arising and ceasing. This present awareness is always the same. It's present and aware. And also, it's not limited to this individual person I call Kokyo. This awareness, when we examine carefully, if it doesn't have any edges or boundaries, there's no boundary between Kokyo's awareness and your awareness. Those are just ideas of separation and boundaries. It's all inclusive. Every possible experience for Kokyo is arising within this space of awareness. Every possible experience for each of you is arising within the space of awareness. And if we compare the space of awareness amongst each other, we say, well, it's just empty, boundless, and unchanging. And it has no particular, color or shape or sound or anything by which to get a hold of it. And in that way, it's the same for each of us, exactly the same. What's different is the content of the space of awareness. The content for each of us is quite different, but the just pure knowing itself, be the fact of being aware, would be the same for each of us and for other types of living beings also. Just the fact of being present and aware. So it's not the dualistic consciousness that's divided into subject and object. It's a big space of awareness in which the sense of subject appears. A sense of Kokyo over here can appear within the space, and a sense of you over there can appear within the space. But there's no difference between the subject and the object. They're both just appearances, experiences arising within this one space of experiencing. And we can call this third type of reality, talking about here, another kind of self. And a true self, it's a true self, it's not in the sense that it's not just disappearing moment by moment, it's always who we really are. But it's not like that fixed entity that also seems to be singular, permanent, and independent. This big one, in a way, is also seems to be singular, but not as a singular entity, just indivisible. And it seems to be, in a way, permanent, but not as some entity that's continuing, but just at the unchanging space of presence. And it seems to be independent, in that it doesn't depend on anything to be. But it's different from the imagined one, because the imagined one feels contracted and individual and separate. It feels like a personal I, whereas this third type of self is not personal. We can call it self, but it's an impersonal self. It's like the same for everyone, and everyone is equally included within big self. We can also call it Buddha nature. So, there's a sutra, a scripture of the Buddha, where the Buddha called the Mahayana Mahaparinirvana Sutra. That means something like the great vehicle, the vast vehicle, great, complete, unbinding scripture. Scripture of unbinding everything, releasing everything. The Great Release Sutra, Mahaparinirvana Sutra. And in the sutra, in chapter 12, a disciple of the Buddha called Kashyapa, who is not the same Mahakashyapa that we hear other stories about, but another one with the same name, he says, Buddha, world-honored one, is there any kind of self in all the realms of sentient beings or not? Because I hear this teaching about not self, but is there any kind of self actually? And the Buddha says, oh good man, Kashyapa, self, in Sanskrit, Atman, is what, is meant by Tathagata Garbha. So that's another Sanskrit term that means like the heart of the Buddha or Buddha nature. So Atman or self is what I the Buddha mean by Tathagata Garbha, or the essence of all the Buddhas. The Buddha goes on, all sentient beings have Buddha nature, and this is what we call the self. Such self has, from the very beginning, been covered by innumerable obscurations and afflictions, and that is why beings can't see it. and they seem to not be able to access it because it's covered. And then the Buddha brings up all these metaphors, like it's hidden under the floor, or it's like gold hidden in rock. It's encrusted with all this stuff, so beings can't see it. It's always present, but it seems to be hidden. It seems to be obscured by our thoughts, particularly the thought that who I really am is this individual entity, the owner of the body and mind. Like that kind of thought blocks, it seems to block this spacious, vast, ever-present, always peaceful and free awareness. And it's also blocked by like all our thoughts and our, even our perceptions. We look at like colors over there, we hear sounds over there, and they're arising within the space, and their nature is the space of awareness. But our misperception, our dualistic perception, we think the stuff's over there separate from us, and therefore we don't notice this self. It seems to be hidden. Not really hidden, because as soon as we look for it and ask, is awareness present? And say, yes, awareness is present. We're starting to rediscover it again. When we ask, is awareness present? In order to look for it, we withdraw our attention a little bit from all those colors and sounds. It's as if we turn this light of awareness back away from all those objects out there. It's as if we turn it back and, become aware of simply being aware. It was already there, right? But it just seemed to be hidden because we were focusing on other stuff. We were focusing on the particular experiences rather than the experiencing itself. So these are three types of self. And in this essay of Dogen called Self-Verification Samadhi, he seems to be referring to this third type, this true self that we're being called to verify through practice. We're being encouraged to practice in a way that verifies the reality of our true self. To practice letting go of our, in a way, fascination with all of these external appearances. They are fascinating, but in Zazen, just let go of our fascination a little bit and settle into this spacious presence that's very much at ease. We can practice in such a way. We can practice letting go of fixation on our thoughts and feelings. Just, it's not like we disrespect them or anything, but we just let them be. Just like, yes, yes, I'm all day long, I'm thinking and feeling and seeing and hearing. All that stuff is going on. But in Zazen, in meditation, you can just let it all just kind of settle on its own and just become curious. Is awareness present? In the midst of all of this stuff, in the background? Yeah, it is, actually. Well, what is it? Actually, I'm not sure what it is. It's like space in which everything is happening. I can't get a hold of it. It's not another experience. But it is present. Always. Whenever I check, there is awareness present. So we can practice asking this question, is awareness present? And if we ask it sincerely and openly and fully, right at the moment of asking it, there is a verification of reality of this true self. It's maybe still a little bit hazy and unclear at first, but here it is, the fact of just simply being aware. The practice of asking as awareness present is simultaneous with the verification of the presence of awareness. Verification means like a direct confirmation that awareness is present. So this practice of asking and the verification of awareness are simultaneous. Practice and verification are not two. It's not like we ask and ask and ask, it's awareness present, and eventually it starts slowly creeping into view and like, yes, yes, here I am. I'm sorry I'm late. Not like that. It's like as soon as we look for it, immediately it is verified as present. Practice of looking and the verification of the reality of awareness are simultaneous. Now, it could be that what we're finding is actually not our true self exactly. It still might be a kind of version of dualistic consciousness. So we can examine further. Is it coming and going? If it's coming and going, then it's dualistic consciousness that comes and goes moment to moment with it, with the object of experience. Does it have any edges or boundaries? Like, or location? Like behind the eyeballs? If it does, then it's dualistic consciousness. It's like a kind of sense of subjectivity over here. But if it's timeless and boundless and, always at peace, even when the thoughts are not peaceful, the awareness of them is peaceful. If we can find a timeless, boundless, peaceful, ever-present, very ordinary awareness, it's not something we create or cultivate through practice. If it were something cultivated or created, that would be, again, dualistic consciousness or something in the body and mind, some conditioned reality. But this is an unconditioned, ever-present, peaceful, spacious, alive, bright, knowing. It is exactly the same when we're totally distracted as it is when we're really deeply settled in Zazen. It's exactly the same when we're really depressed and just don't even want to like get up this morning. It's exactly the same then as it is when we're ecstatically enjoying a beautiful day. This is what we mean by unchanging. It's the same with every experience because it is just experiencing itself. So this third type of self can be verified through practice. Practice such as inquiring into whether it is present here and now, and whether it is timeless and boundless, and whether it is free and easy. So this is a kind of summary of three types of self. And then Dogen Zenji has this essay called Self-Verification Samadhi. And he says, what has been authentically transmitted by all Buddhas and all Zen ancestors is self-verification samadhi. It calls for following a teacher and following a sutra. This is the eyeball of Buddhas and ancestors, the wisdom eye. So it calls for following a sutra. We just heard some lines about this true self from the Buddha's Parinirvana Sutra, the Great Release Sutra, where he says that all beings have this Buddha nature, this true self, but it's been seemingly obscured or hidden by our afflictive emotions and our dualistic thinking from beginningless time. But luckily we don't have to like make it or improve it or anything. We just, the only practice is a practice of letting go of the obscurations that seem to block it. So that's like following a Parinirvana Sutra that is part of the self-verification samadhi, and following a teacher. So like there's a person talking about this that helps us to access it, like a person who's kind of like trying to transmit the sutras, understand the sutras, and then convey it in a language that's maybe easier to grok than the sutras. So Dogen says we need these teachers and we need these sutras for the self-verification samadhi. And then he verifying the true self of ever-present awareness. Then he makes this kind of, or later in the essay, he makes this kind of unusual statement. Thus, both following a teacher and following a sutra are actually following the self. A sutra is no other than a sutra as self, or a self sutra. In other words, this Parinirvana Sutra is, we might think it's some book that's like sitting over on the bookshelf there, but it's actually, it is our self. Because remember, this true self is all inclusive. It has no edges or boundaries, and every experience that arises within this self as the self. There isn't anything that's not the self. So that sutra on the bookshelf, we open it up and see the words. It's, we're reading ourself. It's not something other. And this teacher, like the person appearing on the screen, looks like somebody over there, but actually it's ourself. It's an experience arising within this space of awareness, and everything within the space of awareness is nothing other than awareness. So what we call other, these other people and these other books, are, ultimately speaking, are ourselves. So Dogen says, we need to follow sutras to understand this. We need to follow teachers to understand this. But following a teacher and following a sutra are actually following the self. A sutra is no other than a sutra as self. A teacher is invariably a teacher as the self. Teacher that is the self. This being so, to visit teachers everywhere is to visit the self everywhere. Wherever we go, we never leave the self. We're visiting distant lands, we're visiting ourselves, we're visiting teachers, we're visiting ourselves. To take up 100 grasses and examine the myriad things is to take up the self. To take up myriad trees is to take up the self. Study the self that always endeavors thus. In this study, drop away, drop off any ideas of the self, merge with this self, and verify the true self. And then he says, and we've also been talking about this teacher Da Wei that Dogen brings up in these in this essay, and his teacher Yuan Wu. Dogen sometimes critiques Da Wei, but he praises Yuan Wu. And here's a related saying from the letters of Yuan Wu. all the myriad things, all these experiences happening right now, are neither opposed to nor contrary to your true self. Directly pass through to freedom, and they make one whole. All the myriad things make one whole called ourself. It has been this way from beginningless time. If you can let go of grasping at objects, means like anything outside yourself, and also inwardly forget your false idea of the imagined self, then things themselves are the true self, and the true self itself is all things. Things and self are one suchness, opening through to infinity. Thus says Yuan Wu. So this is a little bit of what we've been talking about this week, this kind of thing. And would anybody like to inquire into any aspects of the self and this study? Limited time before the appearance of lunch arises within the vast ocean of self. In the room or online, or anyone who wasn't in the retreat this week, or anyone who was, welcome to bring up anything you like. Yes, Jikoji.
The talk, Kokyo. My question is, in the self-verification samadhi, you talked about some techniques that, or some inquiries we can practice to kind of fathom or taste the true self.
To verify the true self.
To verify.
Practices that verify the true self. And the verification is not separate from the practice. Yes.
Right. And so the entity that asks, is it awareness or is it the true self? Is that entity, is that the second type of self that is asking which is making that inquiry?
Yes, yes. Great question. So it might feel like that there is an entity asking the question. And if it feels like there's an entity called me asking the question, then that would be the second type, yes, the imagination that there's some entity asking the question. But we could also watch the question arise as part of the interdependent relationship of body and mind experiences. You could say, why is this question, is awareness present suddenly arising now? Well, actually, it's probably arising due to various conditions, like that Kokyo keeps recommending it, hearing these words. So that's part of my condition. He's one of my conditions, is bringing up this question. And now, or I've asked it before, and now I'm going to ask it again, because it's quite interesting to ask this. So you can say that the inquiry is now a conditioned inquiry. We're doing it, or it's happening due to conditions, but it's not really an entity asking it. It's just like all the elements of body and mind are coming together to create this thought. This thought is part of the collection of body and mind experiences. And the thought is, I wonder if awareness is present now. So in that case, it would be the first type of self is asking the question. It doesn't need to be a reified entity asking it. And then if we look deeper, And we ask the question, is awareness present, and verify the fact that it is, and we call this our true self, then we could see this whole process of asking and verifying is all just the play of this one true self. It seemed like it was a body and mind conditioned event that was asking, and yes, we could conventionally describe it that way, but actually, it's just the true self can do this amazing thing of manifesting as a so-called particular person that then investigates, the person investigates the reality of their true self and verifies it or aligns with this verification. So then you could describe it as all three of the selves then are doing the practice. But the second one is the one that we don't really need. Second one kind of diminishes the practice. It's like, well, there's this entity asking, but like, it seems to be getting in the way. And so that's the one, the reified entity. We can do this practice and ask these questions without reifying the entity. But it's hard not to, because we're very used to it. Could you call it that?
Yes, thank you. That does get rid of that second entity. The follow-up question is, seems like just the way the body is constructed and hence the mind, it seems like it's all about what we can sense through the senses, whether it's sound, touch, sight, taste, or smell. And so it seems like all there is the senses, because that's all you can sense. But it seems like this self-verification is outside the senses. And so how do you verify something which is outside the senses, or is it something which is within the senses? So that's kind of what is it. I don't get what that means.
So yes, as you say, it seems like all there is these five senses. But actually the Buddha says that is a big part of our experience of this dependently arising body thing is these five senses. But the Buddha says there's also a sixth sense, which is the mind sense. And, and that's part of what's happening too. That's undeniable. Like a thought isn't a physical sense, right? And, a feeling isn't just a color or a sound. So there's these kind of mental experiences as well as the five physical senses. And, but those are also just stuff happening within, awareness. So we're kind of, you say, well, what can we find besides the experiences of the five senses? We're looking back. We can use them in the sense of asking, well, what is it actually that is seeing these colors of the Jikoji Zendo? And we say, well, it's the eye consciousness, and seeing sees it. Yes, that's right. But well, what is seeing actually? What is this process of seeing? Well, it's a kind of knowing. It's a kind of awareness, actually. A very particular kind of limited kind of awareness that only relates to colors and shapes. But it's a kind of knowing, and say, well, what is seeing in its very essence? It's the very nature of seeing is just awareness, actually. It's a kind of awareness. So if we trace it back further and further, hearing and seeing, what is it that hears these sounds? Who hears is one of the classic Zen koans, actually. Who hears? Well, the ear does. Okay, but like, what makes it possible to have the experience of hearing? Well, it's a kind of knowing. Who is it that hears? Actually, this big space of presence that is simultaneously hearing and seeing, and sometimes smelling and tasting. So the senses seem to block the space of our true self, but they don't really. If we trace back the senses to their to their heart, to their root. You find they're just types of knowing or experiencing or awareness. And the mental sense, the sense of just knowing things, we can also trace that back to whether's just, if we know a thought or a feeling, what is it that knows the thought and the feeling? We find that this self, this true self.
Thank you, Kokyo. The lunch bell has rung. So unless there's any, one more question maybe. Those.
And it's like nothing else. So you can study lunch as you eat it. As yourself. Yes, it doesn't diminish the taste, actually. Right? Enjoy the taste. You can enjoy conversing with others. And if you think of it just in the midst of all that, once in a while, become curious of all these, this array of multi-sensory experiences. Where is all this happening? Who's it happening to? Actually, there's just this boundless, uncompounded, unchanging, ever-present ocean, spacious brightness we call our true self. That as soon as we practice looking, it is verified. Thank you very much for your attention this morning, and for all of you who are in the session, and all of you who came to fill it out for the very end, and any merit we've generated through our conversation, any practice that's arisen here, verifying any aspects of reality, may we offer it and dedicate it to all beings throughout space and time. May all beings be free from all discontent.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.